They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me today on the Commons is an old friend, Stephen Marcus from Massachusetts. It's been a long time since Stephen's been on, and he's been kind of busy. He recently won the Don Buck Award for Exceptional Leadership in the field of community association law. Congratulations, Steve.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us. I know that you had to squeeze us in a little bit because you're a busy man.
I always have time for you, Sue.
You do?
Always, always.
Oh, good. I'll remember that. I'll remember that. You might not be gone so long from now on. So, Steve, what's been going on? I know that this is the time of year when a lot of states start rewriting laws and trying to tweak existing laws and give associations more powers and strip homeowners of more rights, and away we go with it. So have you heard of anything phenomenal that's coming down the pike?
The most of the laws that I've been involved with have been on a federal level, and you know, some that are kind of interesting. What happens, at least in Massachusetts, is 6,000 bills get filed for the 17-month session, and they usually refile some prior bills that didn't go anywhere. So it's very difficult at this stage to figure out what's going to occur on a state level. But one of the things that the National Association of Home Builders is doing, and they're trying to do it in Massachusetts as well, is this requirement that you give them notice and the opportunity to fix defects before you can institute an action. It hasn't gone anywhere in the last 5 years in Massachusetts.
So, yeah, there's been a lot of litigation there, and frankly, I've heard some pretty nasty horror stories that have come out about construction defects. But Steve, could we avoid all that if the local municipal government provided the inspection services that they're supposed to provide and make sure that these things are built properly?
I have a different solution. The problem we have in Massachusetts, and it's probably common throughout the country, is that the building inspectors issue certificates of occupancy, but they're not clerk of the works, so they're not present while the building is being built. They go in at different stages. And the courts of Massachusetts, anyway, have said that the building inspector is not a guarantor of the work unless there's fraud or something highly unusual. What I would suggest to developer clients is, or to developers in general, is bring in the types of condition engineers that the associations typically bring in after they take over control, have them review, spend a little extra money, have them review the engineer, review the plans and the specifications, review the construction as it progresses, because what we often find is that by the time the buildings are built, the answer from some of the engineers is it would be cheaper to tear down the building and start again.
Wow.
And it might be a 10-cent fix if somebody sees it while it's happening, and it becomes a major fix after the structure is complete.
Wow, that's pretty sad.
It's pretty sad, but it's not very expensive. So, and it would shift liability away from the developers to the engineer to make sure that things are done properly. So it's almost a win-win for the developer and the association. But it's not fair for a somebody to buy a new home, assume that it's perfect, and then find out that they have $30,000 assessments, or the range is pretty dramatic. We had a case 2 years ago where the construction defects were $12.25 million.
There's one,
and it was awarded.
Yeah, there's one group of people that seems to get a pass every time, and that's local municipal governments, because they typically mandate associations that gives them all this free tax money.
Yeah.
And part of what they're supposed to do is oversee some of this stuff, and they're just not doing it. And yet, time and again, we go after the developer. We go out. Now we're going after the engineers, and we're going after, you know, everybody involved except the municipal government. And I think since they're there and they have a duty and a responsibility to their constituents, yet they just get a free pass every time.
Yeah, and I'm wondering what the I'm very familiar with what the law is in Massachusetts, where the thought is the building inspector is not staffed properly to be out at the site enough.
The baloney excuses.
But it may be that in other states there's a higher standard that's involved. But if there isn't, the idea of an independent engineer being hired by the developer to make sure the mistakes aren't made would go a long way in reducing the aggravation for the developer, and then more aggravation for the poor unit owners who, in many cases, condominiums are the first entry to home ownership, and you don't want a $30,000 or $50,000 surprise.
Well, they can't afford it, Steve. I mean, you're setting them up for failure, and I don't know how many people I have heard from who are so fed up with association living. They're desperately trying to sell their units, their single-family homes, their condominiums, whatever it is they have. Problem is they can't find something that is not in an association, and that goes back to the local municipal government mandates.
Yeah, and it's I think there's a lot in Massachusetts that is older, but still single family subdivisions. But I think the typical buyer likes the idea of the homeowner association or the condominium. For some reason, there's the thought that new construction is perfect. So most people don't even get their own home inspector if they're buying a new unit. They just don't. They assume that if it's new, it must be good.
Yeah, it's nobody else has been in there, so it's got to be good. You're right. But I still think...
I'm right as to that's the thought process of the buyer, but I mean, at least if they went around on a Saturday or Sunday and started talking to some of the other neighbors, the people already living there, and ask about the developer and the attention to fixing punch list items within units and any issues they know be in the common areas. That would all help. But there's no certificate you need to buy a condominium or homeowner in a homeowner association, and it's much more complicated than a typical single-family subdivision. But the interesting thing is that the municipalities sort of pawned off the responsibilities they had during the 1960s and 1970s, where they were providing most of these municipal-type services,
mm-hmm.
and have now shifted them to the associations.
Right, right. We can just palm it off on the association, let them take care of it. Don't bother us. Just send us your tax dollars. And that's in essence.
But if there's enough of disasters at some point, I think Evan McKenzie makes a point in his second book about at some point, the municipalities might have to come back in to take over some potential disasters.
I think that happened in California, in Sacramento, where there was a subdivision that was just absolutely a disaster. It was falling apart. People were, it really was a mess. And the city of Sacramento had to come in and take, I think it was Sacramento, had to come in and take it over and use taxpayer dollars to fix it up.
The other thing that I find scary in California, my daughter lives in San Francisco, and just for her four-unit condominium, there was like nasty debates over whether you should buy earthquake insurance. And then I talked to some attorneys who do this type of work out in California, and they said the prices are so expensive, people don't buy insurance for earthquakes. So there's no coverage.
So there's no coverage for earthquakes, huh?
Well, if you don't buy earthquake insurance, you have zero amount of coverage. But they don't want to pay the premium.
Of course, we've seen some pretty disastrous results from some of those earthquakes in California.
Yeah, the one thing that CAI is working on is, if you remember Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah, that was on the East Coast, yeah.
Yeah, probably no different than Katrina, but it brought to the surface that the National Flood Insurance Program covers the homeowners, but if a condominium association has damage, they are not a protected entity under the National Flood Insurance Program. So that's one of the things that is being worked on, to get the condominium and homeowner associations the same protection that a single-family homeowner would have.
So in other words, if you're in a high-rise and there's some damage, you get yours covered, but then you're going to have to come up with, even though you've bought hurricane insurance, you're going to have to come up with a special assessment to take care of the building.
And if you're on a higher floor, you're probably not going to have damage.
Well, you
really can't buy your own policy. It really has to be the master policy. But the government, which typically bails out flood disaster victims, considers the people protected to be homeowners, not associations.
Oh, what a mess we have, eh?
Yep.
Oh, what a mess. So how are we going to fix it? What else are we fixing out there?
The victory, we had a little victory with FHA, Federal Housing Administration. They're the only player in town for reverse mortgages. and some elderly folks like the idea of reverse mortgages, but the only place to get them is if FHA approves the condominium, and they had come out with comments about 6 months ago saying that if the condominium is in one of the 22 limited priority states where the association has a limited priority over the lender, that they would not approve those condominiums. Fortunately, on January 23rd, they reversed their position, came out with their final comments, and they take effect on August 17th, 2017, and they will do associations that have limited priority liens. So that's good news. I haven't been as involved with it. There's a lot of folks at CI who've been involved with the ham radio issue. It seems like they're going to work out something just like they did on satellite dishes. But the one that I lose sleep over is the, and I've spent a lot of time, is the Federal Housing Finance Agency, which has the role of conservator under the Housing for an Economic Recovery Act of 1988, and they didn't do anything from 1998 till 2015, and then in 2015 started their attack in Nevada, and have said they're going to go around to the 21 super lien states, and there's something in the Housing Economic Recovery Act of 1998 that says that the FHFA as conservator cannot have its property subject to foreclosure, and the property of Fannie and Freddie is considered to be the their mortgages. So whereas associations in the past could say if the lender doesn't foreclose for 300 days and 500 days, and the numbers are staggering, that the association could take the action, the lender could bid in at the foreclosure, and it would be protected. But now with so many homes underwater, if it's subject to the first mortgage, there's probably not enough equity for the association to get anything, and basically the association is not going to get paid until the Fannie or Freddie Club forecloses in 3, 4, or 5 years. So you have the federal government freeloading off the condominium and homeowners. FHFA took over an abandoned single-family house, they'd pay for insurance, they'd pay for maintenance, they'd pay to winterize it, and all the other costs. With a condominium or homeowner association, they pay nothing, and the poor unit owners or homeowners subsidize the federal government. Just sounds crazy.
It seems there's a whole lot. I mean, once we created these things, there seems to be a whole lot of complications that ultimately leave the individuals holding the bag. Because no matter what, it's going to end up on the backs of the homeowners, the individual homeowners.
And what really bothers me about it is that the condominium association, the homeowner association, and the owners, we don't have a say in terms of who is approved for a loan. And I don't want to say, no, I do want to say, that the robo-signers and the people who were giving people who weren't qualified mortgages likely didn't pay the mortgage and didn't pay the condominium fees and didn't pay the homeowner association dues. and we had zero say in terms of whether they were able to buy into the community.
But this...
So I think the fight that I see coming up is with the lenders, and what I sort of like about this one versus other issues we've discussed over the years is I think that the owners and the boards pretty much have the same objectives.
In some
the unit owners, the homeowners don't want to pay more.
Yeah, no,
and the association doesn't want to charge more.
But here, you know, I'm going to give you a hypothetical. If you went back to the way we owned homes, which was just no association, you just went and kind of like you own the home. If your neighbor got a mortgage and was not able to pay it back, you're not going to get stuck with his bills because there's nothing tying you together, unlike in an HOA or a condominium. Condominium's
or
a little different.
Or a cooperative.
Or a cooperative.
Where we have one mortgage.
Yeah.
On the entire building.
But we've complicated things so much, and we've tied everything up in knots that everybody's responsible for everybody else. And I'd like to see us go back to just, you know, you get your mortgage, you buy your house, and you are left alone. You're in a community, you're in a neighborhood, you've got your neighbors, but you're not responsible for paying off
everybody
their
else.
Stuff. Yeah.
And the problem I guess I have is, I don't know the numbers, but what is it, 30 million, 60 million community association owners? Is that so easy to put the toothpaste into the, back into the toothpaste tube?
But the thing is, you can't do it. Yeah, no, they exist. But why do we keep building them when we've got so many problems and we spent decades trying to fix the problems and we just make things worse?
Because the builders and the marketing people have sold everybody on this idea of maintenance-free, carefree living, which is nothing of the sort.
You know, Steve, I'm glad you said that because I've been saying that all along. No, you're absolutely correct. But again, you know, I went and talked to, because I had a real estate license at one point and I used to sell real estate. And I would go and visit all these new, I mean, we're going back 20 years ago before we had so many associations. And I'd go and the builders would have their builder opens and I would go and talk to them and look at the properties and ask them, I tell them, look, I've got people who want non-HOA housing. Why do you have an HOA? And he says, we have to because the government, the county mandates it. So I go to the county. I know the I know the people on the county board of supervisors. Why are you mandating? Oh, we don't. The developers want it. But the fact is, it is a mandate. They absolutely.
Though I'm sure both are great. I think the municipalities like the idea that people will, these communities will plow their own snow, take care of their own roads, and I think some of the buyers like the idea that they can buy a home and it'll have a community pool and maybe $1 million clubhouse, and again, this nonsense about maintenance-free, carefree living, and oftentimes the initial condominium fees or homeowner dues that the developer states as soon as the developer is out of control, the real costs are dramatically more.
They increase dramatically. No, you're right. But, you know, you can still have the clubhouse and you can still have the pools and the tennis courts and all of that stuff and have a company own it. It's, you know, make it a real business. People who know how to manage swimming pools and sell memberships. You can have it in the neighborhoods.
My wife was a military brat, Air Force, and all over the world, born on Guam, Germany, France, California, but they ended up at Otis Air Force Base and down the Cape. And they bought in one of the first homeowner associations that was created in Massachusetts in 1963, paid the outrageous price of $13,500. And they couldn't, they looked at one for $14,500, and that was way too much for them. And there were some common facilities, like a little clubhouse and something where people could swim and do whatever. And it was sort of not voluntary dues, and it worked pretty well.
Yeah.
I lived in a subdivision that had architectural controls, and they disappear typically after 30 years, no board, no anything, and that worked pretty well.
So it can work.
It can work, but how are you gonna undo million people who live in this, and do we end up with something better or worse? When I grew up, I had neighbors who their yard were next door to us, and it was a mess, like for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no control over what they did or how they took care of it. So I don't know where the degree is.
You know, there are different ways of handling things. I was on the board of directors of my association many, many moons ago, and
yeah.
I had some neighbors who called me up, and they said, "Shu, can you do something about these people? Their yards are a mess." And so you had the person who contacted me had an immaculate yard, and some of the others were not so immaculate. And I said, look, I could, but I'm just going to interfere in your neighborhood, and I don't want to do that. What I would suggest is when you go and buy some flowers and plants, buy a few extra. Take them over to your neighbor and say, look, I've got a few extra. They're too many. Would you like them, and would you like me to help you plant them? And the neighbor was thrilled. And
it may work in some cases, but the place has like junk cars and junkyard.
Steve, the whole neighborhood ended up being the most beautiful.
Yeah.
That street, because they all worked together, and the association did not get involved. It was the neighbors who fixed it, which is what this whole nonsense was built at is, you know, initially it's a neighborhood and where you have more control. You can fix your destiny. You can decide how to live. But then the you becomes a board of dictators or an inefficient manager or whatever the deal is, instead of having the actual people take care of it. And so now you've got a fourth layer of government, really, with no oversight.
But would a professional company coming in and being the board? We've done that before.
I don't like that idea because, again, this gives you the greatest control over your neighborhood, but then we're going to bring in professionals to manage you. It doesn't go with the message we're trying to give here.
Well, I guess my message, based on my 36 years of doing this, is that the problem that I think condominiums and homeowner associations have, and maybe especially condominiums, is that you can have the brightest five board members in the world during the day. And then they get home from work, and now it's their neighbors. And you have a business dispute, and the two parties never have to talk to each other again. You have a unit owner versus board dispute, and the urinary isn't going anywhere, the board isn't going anywhere. So these things tend to fester and grow and get larger than they should. But I'm gonna guess that it's probably an overstatement to say that no community association works. I think. Some do and some don't.
Some do.
I wish I knew the mystery.
Some do, but not all. But they're working now, but they're subject to change because you can end up with a bad board member, you can end up with a bad manager, you can end up with a greedy attorney who says, oh, if you don't do this, then they're going to sue you, and so you have to enforce. And some of the enforcements that we're seeing are so outrageously stupid. You know, I just feel like going in and knocking a few heads together. But I think when I was on the board, I think the big thing was sunshine. There was a distrust between the board and the homeowners. So when they came to the meeting and we're sitting there with our packages and they think we've got some secrets there. So I turned my package over. I said, here, you can see exactly what I'm looking at. And they're going, you can't do that. And I said, they're homeowners. It's their money. Of course they can see that. So I think once we've, you know, once you've got this sunshine, once you've got this transparency, there's less animosity and there's less mistrust. So you are.
Yeah, I found that I'm usually the one. I think the attorneys might have a
heart attack.
Yeah, they do. I'm not talking about creating it. I'm a peacemaker. But if somebody calls me and says, "My God, the homeowners want to see the minutes of the meetings 10 days after the meeting is held, or 5 days," it's have the meeting opened up, have the minutes go out to all the homeowners. And create the transparency, and the more that's told, I think the less suspicion unit owners have.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things. And you say, I don't know why some of them work and some of them don't. I think there's this different class of members, of owners, and there shouldn't be. If you're on the board, you're no different than any other homeowner in the association. They have the same rights to the information as you do. We had some financial questions, so I told the manager that I wanted all the financial information on the conference table, 8 o'clock the next morning. I would be there, and I said to all of the homeowners in the room, I said, anybody who wants to come with me and go through the financial documents, I could use all the help I can get. So it was open. I didn't cherry pick anyone. It was a blanket opening, and I had a lot of people who came in and a lot of people who went through it, and we worked together as we should have.
Well, it should be. I'm a big advocate of transparency in terms of records. The board, after all, is working for the owners.
Yes, thank you.
And there may be certain things that are attorney-client privilege or subject of litigation, but for the same way your money's going, I don't see why you wouldn't want the owners to know.
I totally agree with you, and I think once you've done that, once you've opened it up and given them all the information, I think you just take away any mistrust. It's right there. It's black and white. You can see what I'm seeing. And
but you go as far as saying that if you were the king of the world or the queen of the world, that you could take a sampling of associations and say, give me the ability to put systems in place, and I can make these work the way that they should work.
You and I can do that, Steve.
We can do everything. We can do everything.
You know what? You and I could probably come up with a plan.
Now, the thing is going to be convincing some of your colleagues that they can't, they've got to get out of the way.
They're afraid of me.
I'm good. We'll make a great team then.
they won't dare say anything. But the one that I know is going to come up year after year, and it's already showing up on the CI message boards.
Uh-oh.
But it's on these damn decorations. Why can't you celebrate for a period of time Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa?
First Amendment right, Steve.
What's that?
It's a First Amendment right.
It's
a First Amendment right. It's free speech. It's Christmas. You're going to put Christmas lights up. It's Hanukkah. You're going to put a menorah up. Whatever it is, celebrate.
No, but the early days, and you talked about Bo Pats, and we can get into that. But in the early days, it was we want everybody to be uniform. So 1979, when I was doing this, everybody wanted everything to look identical.
The brown shirts.
And we should celebrate differences.
Yes, we should. Yes, we absolutely should. So CAI seems to be doing a little bit of a turnaround and a comeback. For years and years and years, they just went on the rampage against pets. You can't have pets in associations. We want DNA samples. You can have this breed and not that color and this size and not this, and you can have it between 5 in the morning and 7. Just absolutely ridiculous rules and regulations. You had people peeking through people's windows to see if they had an unapproved cat.
That case out of California was crazy. Nobody knew that the cat or cats were there. But they were there.
They were there, and people were peeking in through the windows. That's, invading this woman's privacy. Cats didn't.
Oh, wait until the drones come by. Marvin Nodoff, who's an attorney in St. Louis, and very, very bright and creative, has written 4 novels on condominiums, but one of them was about a big drone incident where the president of the association was peeking into windows and taking pictures of a naked woman and then sending it out to other owners. But the drone stuff is going to take some of the privacy issues and make them worse and more invasive. But I would want to see boards get a little more laid back about seasonal decorations. Like, what's the big deal?
Just get laid back about everything. I have a woman in Kansas, I think. She's got a little red birdhouse that her son made in school. And she's got it in the tree. And the association's gone absolutely nuts.
Fines or illegal actions?
Yeah. And harassment. I mean, the big thing is harassment. They get all these letters, and then they get charged for the letters from the attorneys. And then they get fines, and they get all kinds of things.
Well, one of the things that had recently changed is, it was in the workplace, but there's now a cause of action for creating a hostile living environment, and I think it's going to be used more and more by association owners, and some of these things should just be resolved by sitting down around a table and figuring it out. And would anybody know that the birdhouse was there if they weren't
walked down the street, you'd see this tiny little red birdhouse that a kid made. Very proud. Mom's very proud. The kid's very proud. It was a project at school. And somebody on the board, or maybe the manager, I don't know, but they don't like her, so they've been going after her. And that's the kind of stuff that's got to stop. I'm so glad to see that they seem to be changing their attitude a little bit about pets.
Yeah, let me go into the pets. So, but first, I have to express my bias.
Okay, you go.
I have a 5.2-pound peek-a-poo, 18-pound peagle, and unfortunately, we lost a really sweet pit bull rescue dog. And she was just very, very gentle. She was great with the other dogs, and she passed away of cancer about a year ago.
Oh,
so I love pets, but I think that what's probably going on is that the Fair Housing Amendments Act allowing emotional support animals is that more associations are losing those fights than winning them. And I don't know if that's the change or if it's something where somehow you and I and whoever have made progress over the years and things are getting more reasonable.
Well, I'd like to think that things are getting more reasonable, but for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, CAI for years, you can't have pets, or if you have a pet, it's got to be this big or that big, and it's got to be this color, and it's got to be this breed, and it can't do this, and you have to give us a sample, and we're going to follow you around with a pooper school. You know, it was just making life miserable, generally making life miserable for everyone. Now there seems to be a 180-degree turnaround, and they're celebrating pets. The next edition of Common Ground magazine is going to be a pet. It's going to be all about
pets. Yeah, pet of the month or pet of the year.
It's going to be all about pets.
Maybe a swimsuit issue. But I think that the courts have, not all the courts, but the New Jersey court, if you have documents that say that you can't have pit bulls or Rottweilers or certain dangerous breeds, in a emotional support animal case down in New Jersey, the court found that you can't simply say no pit bulls. You have to interview the animal because it was a emotional support animal, so it's an animal, not a pet, and figure out whether it has a bad temper or is a good pit bull. But which I don't think I'd want to be doing the interviewing. But,
but what qualifies them to do that anyway? I mean, what qualifies Harry homeowner to decide whether it's a good dog or a bad dog?
I think you have to go to a dog psychiatrist. I have no idea. All I know is somebody from New Jersey sent me this opinion from their Human Rights Commission. And I'm looking at it and say, how would you possibly do this? I mean, does the dog get to bite you first, and then you say, "Oh, I guess this is a bad one." I don't know, maybe there's certain training. Maybe there's if there's dangers, muzzling of the pet when outside. I don't know the answer.
I think you can train pets, and I grew up with a lot of pets, and my father was brilliant. He trained them, and they were well trained. I mean, they didn't go out. The gates were always open, and they could have gone out in the street, but they were trained enough so that they couldn't. They'd run and they'd slide, but they'd never go over the line out onto the sidewalk. And they would just stand there. So I think if you train your pets, I mean, my pets, and I hate leashes. My pets, when I had them, I never put a leash on them. I never restrained them. They were well trained. They stayed with me. They didn't go off. And I think that's what's missing. You know, now pets
and then the people who, the Human Rights Commissions that enforce the emotional support animals on the rights under the Fair Housing Amendments Act would say, well, gee, if they have to go through training of 3 months, that would be an undue delay and an undue cost. So I don't know where it's all going to come out.
The emotional support would be one thing, but pets,
It just depends.
Pets are different. Pet, you could put all sorts of training and certificates and all that. Yeah. Emotional support animals would be much more difficult.
Yeah, that would be different, and you'd have people who are trained to... People who know what they're doing are training them because, they're doing that.
Yeah, and not to be in bad taste, but either Siegfried or Roy weren't happy with the lion or tiger that they had for 30 years. Sometimes animals just, like humans.
Yeah, they go off.
Snap. But those are just tragic events.
Those are isolated incidents, Stephen.
What's that?
Those are isolated incidents.
Well, how many tigers do you think there are at hotels in Las Vegas?
Probably not too many.
But here's my concern. If you have 50 children, let's say under 13, and they're living in a community and there's a Rottweiler or a pit bull, is there going to be, if you were the parent, is there going to be some concerns? I don't know.
Yeah, and my grandson was bitten by a dog that was not well controlled.
You sued, because I understand. I don't do those kind of cases, but I heard the dogs always lose.
The dogs always lose. I don't know what happened there, but
it doesn't matter.
He's such a sweetheart that he wouldn't have wanted that anyway. So,
but it's sad that somebody gets hurt or. So you sort of see both sides, but there still has to be an answer.
No, and again, the owner, the dog's owner, was not in control of the dog, had not trained the dog, and lost control of the dog. And so that was, and the dog went after my grandson's dog, and he stood in the way to protect his dog and got bitten.
Yeah.
So, but, that was a few years.
So what have we solved so far?
We haven't,
just
but I'm glad.
Just that you and I can resolve all the problems?
You know what? I think you and I could probably, if we sat down, we could probably come up with something that's fair to all sides.
I think we said that a few years ago, and we just never did it. Shame on us.
You think we should?
I'd like to think that I'm fairly reasonable. I know that you are getting...
Now, convince your colleagues at CAI that I'm fairly reasonable. Convince Skippy that I'm reasonable. It's like oil and water.
They're afraid of me.
Well, I
don't worry about them.
I'm not worried about them at all. Frank Rathman used to say, "You're ridiculous." Yeah, I listen to your show, and you're just totally ridiculous. I go, "Really, Frank?"
except you've accomplished things. I mean, from when you start, how long have you been doing the show?
This is 17th year. This is my 17th year.
I think you've made decent progress.
You think so?
I think things are going. Things are progressing in the right direction.
Well,
and that's one person. One person. That's just you.
Well, I often wonder if I've made any inroads. The reason I did this was to get the information out there, because so many people had no idea what's going on, what's happening, how to deal with it, or any of the other wonderful stuff. And so I figured I'd put this out here, and I'd bring the people like you on the show to talk about stuff and put out information that's not readily available to the homeowners. The association can hire you and pay you, but the homeowners can't. And the goal was to put that, just to put information out there, transparency.
But the answer can't be that the attorneys make their decisions based on how much money they can make, but on being able to sleep at night, saying that they gave good and reasonable advice to their boards. And I think the flip side is that there are probably some homeowners who are overly zealous the other way, and they're never going to like anything that associations do.
Oh, absolutely. So, oh, absolutely. And I've run into them. No, and there is. And you've got them on both ends, and fortunately they're not the majority. I think the majority are somewhere in the middle and they're reasonable and you can sit down and talk to them. Unless they've been targeted for a long time and then they just go off the deep end, and that's understandable. And I've had a lot of people, you know, I've had people call me up and whisper in the phone. They're afraid of answering the door. They're afraid of answering the phone. They're afraid of getting the mail. They're just terrified. They're holed up in their homes and they won't go anywhere because they're afraid someone from the association's going to come after them. And you can't live like that, Stephen.
No, and that's the problem of the people living with their neighbors. So you resolve one problem and then you have 50 others versus just having a business-to-business dispute and never dealing with the person again.
It shouldn't be.
No, I know.
You know, it shouldn't be. And when I would say here, you know, let's look at it, and I'm going, this is what I'm thinking and this is why I'm thinking it, but can you see a different, you know, a different solution? Or do you see something that I'm not seeing? Tell me. And so now they're part of the process. And all of a sudden, there's not that them against us anymore. You know, because any decision I make is going to affect them.
Where I have not been diligent is some folks who are pretty bright with CAI did, like, community associations in the 2020s. And I haven't read it, so I can't see whether it was a great piece of work or not. Everybody thought that celebration in Florida was going to be perfect, and it became much less than perfect.
A lot less than perfect.
And they're the best people in the country, and they still had thousands of fake flamingos out every night.
Oh, I love those fake flamingos. I've got a room full of them. My listeners send them to me.
Yeah, but they brought in the best attorneys, managers, and everything else in the country. And if Disney can't do it right, who can? But I think the talk should continue. You and I probably haven't spoken in 2-3 years. I don't know.
It's been a while.
But I think unless the discussions keep going on, then nobody's we're going to continue having the same issues. Your constituency is going to be concerned. The CAI constituency is going to be concerned the other way. Well, we have two common grounds, though, is this FHFA trying to take away the limited priority lien as conservative for Fannie and Freddie. And we also have this legislation kicking around federally that would allow tax deductions for community association dues.
I think that would be awesome because you know it's part of your property taxes and your property taxes are deductible. So I think that's a great one. I can get on board with that. Steve, we've got just a couple of minutes left and I know you've got a conference call to get to, so I want to get you out there. But first of all, I want to thank you greatly for coming on. I always enjoy talking to you. I also want
to did I mention that the New England Patriots are again, the world champions, New England Patriots. And my son and I were at the game.
You did tell me that. You did tell me that. And I didn't make the connection. I'm not a football fan, but I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I've taken my son from age 11, now he's 27. MBA JD down at last semester at UMiami Law. And he's a good kid, and he's run 11 full marathons in different states for Crohn's. But we've gone to 5 out of 6 in the last that period of time. So Jake has had 5 once in a lifetime Super Bowl experiences.
Don't wait that long to come back again, Steve.
I felt hurt that you didn't call. Now, I think you had called me at one point, and I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And then it sort of disappeared or whatever.
You know, when I started doing this show 17 years ago, I do a 6-month contract. And I have to sign something to say that I can do 6 months. And I thought, my God, am I going to be able to come up with enough to talk about in 6 months?
Have you ever had a problem?
I can't keep up with it. 17 years later, here we are. I can't keep up with everything.
Maybe we should call it the Bartholomew and Maka Show.
Yeah, got it. Next time you're in town, we'll come in here and we'll just burn up the airwaves.
Okay, keep doing the great job you're doing.
You
I'll
too.
Keep trying to plug away, doing what I think I have to do.
Thanks.
And as long as we keep making progress, I'll be happy.
So will I. Thanks, Steve.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.